Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
This is Radio Influence. The future is now.
A championship! Introducing the world's heavyweight champion, the Crusher!
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crushell. The con man is here keeping us on track. And we're your weekly source for performance information, sport, business, life in general. It doesn't matter. If you're trying to get better at something, or if you're supporting somebody, coaching somebody, mentoring, or if you're a manager or employer of people who are trying to get better or who you're trying to help get better, this is the place to be. And if you have questions, comments, smart remarks, or if you have a topic you'd like us to investigate, let us know. We could dedicate a segment of the show, or if we like it enough, if it's intriguing enough, we could dedicate an entire show to your idea. So get to us. You can write to us on the World Wide Web at info@crushperformance.com. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And if you're on Facebook, you can join our group. It's called The Talent Grid. We're just connecting people with the world of performance there. Go on to The Talent Grid. Apply. We'll let you in. And if you want to sign up for our newsletter and get connected to our podcast and all of the links that we have, our website is crushperformance.com. Well, 2017 has been a great year for Crush Performance so far. We kicked it off with a bang. Our good friend Jim Fannin, the coach of champions, joined us to set us up with the right mindset and approach for a successful 2017. We followed that up with the no BS version of the Crush War on Sugar. And the Crush War on Sugar will continue. Each month we dedicate one show to diet, nutrition, and the impact sugar is having on our health. And it is devastating. And our show with Dr. Andoise Allen was enlightening, to say the least. And truthfully, that is the no BS version of what's going on in the food world. Incredibly alarming. Thanks for your feedback on that show. And there's plenty more to come. Last week, on the eve of the Super Bowl, just a fantastic show with registered psychologist John Stevenson of Zone Performance. We were talking about training the brain and how technology and the mind might be the last bastions for really pushing human performance forward. And I think that is absolutely true. Listen, we have a really good handle on the physical side of development, especially in sport. And on this show, we use sport as sort of our guide, but make no mistake, the things we talk about can be applied to virtually every aspect of human performance, regardless of what you're doing. Last week, we were looking at where are we at in training the mind? Well, there's new technology out that's allowing us in real time to evaluate, look at how our brain is responding, and make adjustments that we could just never do before. Things like the NeuroTracker, things like the bio and neurofeedback systems that we now have on our computers. It is an absolutely fascinating world to operate in, and I'm incredibly excited to see where the next 5 years take us, because if we really look at where we're going to advance human performance, it is going to be in understanding and controlling the mind, and also the influence technology has on our performance. And technology, not just in the sense of the equipment we're using inside of sport, a golf club, a baseball bat, the new shoe technology or turf technology, the new ice technology, heck, the new water technology they have for the Olympics. There's a lot of technology that's influencing performance, and there's definitely going to be advances there. But harnessing and understanding how we can train the mind and our focal points, our attitude, and all of the data and information we're getting on developing character and aggressiveness, the compete levels, it's all coming together and it's incredibly exciting. Well, I want to thank everybody for their feedback on last week's show. Going into the Super Bowl, it was interesting because the Falcons quarterback, Matt Ryan, actually participates in something called the Cognizant's NeuroTracker, which is a 3D training device. And if there is ever a program that forces you to focus, concentrate, and stay on task, That's one of them. You know, the visual training tools that we have now are exceptional. And there's no question it can help with our vision and where to focus, what to focus on. There's no question about it. But we're also influencing the way our mind processes, not just the speed, but the way our mind processes the environment around us. One of the things we always talk about in sport performance when we work with our athletes is protecting your vision and how important vision is, because what we see and what we feed the brain through our eyes will determine our reaction times and our decision making every single second of activity. So getting the proper information into the brain is one, but then teaching and developing our brain to process that information, well, that's a whole new ballgame, and that's where we're at right now in the mind. So I want to thank John for that conversation last week, and I want to thank you all for your comments. And just looking back on the Super Bowl, let's take a look at that first half. You know, we talked about it last week. The one thing the Falcons had to do was understand how to upset and get the Patriots off balance. And the one thing that we mentioned on the show was they needed to crack that offensive line and get to Brady. Listen, if Brady's got time, you're finished. He's just too good. The offensive line for the Patriots is the key to their success. There's no doubt about it. Brady's a big part of it. Their special teams are a part of it. Defense is a part of it. Don't get me wrong. It's all a unit and it's all a team effort. But the crux of the success is that O-line and giving Brady the time he needs to execute. And that's exactly what the Patriots do best. In the first half and even in the first three quarters, you might argue, they got to Brady. They cracked that offensive line. When the Patriots regrouped and shut down access to Brady, look what happened. You could see it in his eyes. And in overtime, listen, you want to talk about focus, control, and human performance? He was on a mission. Calm, cool, collected, and absolutely lethal. It was awesome. By the way, Lady Gaga rocks. Pure walking talent. You know, with my athletes, I joke around all the time. Music's a big part of sport. And if we're on the field, if we're in the gym, I keep harping on anybody. Hey, where's Katy Perry? Get the Katy Perry going. Listen, Katy Perry is walking talent. And I've always liked Lady Gaga, you know, these great young performers. Lady Gaga, though, put on a show. Absolutely fantastic. And of course, and then there's the technology. The drone technology was spectacular. The whole thing was great. What a great show the Super Bowl was last week. Today, however, I want to shift gears. We are going to head into a very, very important conversation as we look at the influence and power of environment. You know, John Stephenson mentioned it last week about the one thing that the Patriots do. Belichick has set up a protocol and an expectation inside that clubhouse and in that team that is unquestionable. And it is also one of the driving factors towards their success. There's no excuses and there's no leniency. They have to operate a certain way. Everybody knows their role. Everybody knows exactly what they have to do. And everybody has all the resources they need in order to be successful. It is a success environment. And today, we are going to get inside one of the greatest educational and developmental experiments of all time, the Polgar sisters. We will be joined by Judith Polgar, the youngest of the three Polgar sisters, who grew up in a real-life experiment looking at the power of environment on performance outcomes. An incredible conversation with Judith Polgar coming up right after this on Crush Performance. Stick around.
Radio Influence brings you the best in digital media broadcasting. When it comes to sports, we've got experts like national sports radio host Rich Herrera, the fabulous Sports Babe, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy. Want a good laugh? Then go on the beach with Pants and Roller Girl, or just LOL with Nancy Alexander. And when it comes to real life, Dangerous Conversation with Scott Ledger and Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill will make you think. When it comes to what you want, Radio Influence has you covered. Find our programming on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at CrushPerformance.com. Now, back to the show.
You And welcome back to Crush Performance. I am Jeff Crochelle. We are your weekly source for performance information. If you have questions, comments, smart remarks, or if you have something you want us to investigate, we may dedicate a segment or even an entire show to your idea. So write to us, info@crushperformance.com. You could follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And if you're on Facebook, The Talent Grid, join our group. Today, a very important conversation as we look at the age-old argument, controversy of nature versus nurture. What has a bigger influence on our development? Is it our genetics that allow us to excel in certain areas, or is it our environment that allow our genetics to do what, well, what they can do? It's a fantastic conversation. I don't think there's any clear-cut answer. It might be a little bit of both, but we certainly know that environment has a lot to do with how we turn out. Our genetics don't have a chance of showing themselves if we're not in the right environment at the right time with the right support. And I also think this conversation can lead us down the road to understanding what it truly takes to be a top performer and to reach our potential, whatever that might be. There's a lot of pressure on young people today to excel and perform. And there's also pressure on parents to help their kids or make sure their kids have the opportunities that everybody else has around them. And I think that's where maybe the developmental model's gone a little astray. We're so focused in keeping up with the Joneses or the kids that are on our young athletes team that we fall into the trap of specialization, year-round sport, rather than getting back to the fundamental basics, especially at the developmental levels, which is, you know, self-selecting and going out and just having fun, playing multiple sports. Those days are slowly fading away, unfortunately. And I think in order to turn it around, we just need to come to the realization that the long-term process is what it's all about. And there's two fundamental things we need to focus on here. Number one, first and foremost, is keep it fun. Look, if we examine the dropout rates and the reason kids are dropping out of organized sports, the number one reason is they're not having fun anymore. They're burnt out, they're tired, they're injured, and they're not having fun. So what are they doing? Well, they're quitting organized sport. To do what? Yes, go play video games, and there's nothing wrong with video games as long as it's controlled in terms of how much time they spend on those screens. But they're looking for more just free play. They're out on the street playing ball hockey with their pals or on the outdoor rink playing hockey, or they're in the pickup game down at the school playing hoops. They're just having fun. No coaches, no supervision, out with their pals, having a good time. And that's what it's all about. Unfortunately, because we're so focused on achieving and succeeding, we've really gotten carried away, and we've taken the fun out of the game. So keep it fun, number one. And second, I think we have to have a real appreciation for the process of development. Look, it doesn't happen in a season. It doesn't happen in five seasons. And trying to condense the developmental process or accelerate the developmental process by focusing on one single sport rarely works. Look, if you're going to specialize before the age of 10, some studies say 12, it's an incredibly dangerous game to play, especially when you look at the long-term development. Some studies have pointed out that athletes who specialize early have a lower ceiling of performance. Whereas those who play multiple sports put in as much time, they're just playing multiple sports, specialize probably at a more appropriate age, 15, 16, 17. Those are predominantly the athletes who go on to succeed at the world-class level, college level, and certainly the professional level. So food for thought there as we try to harness and understand this whole developmental process. Well, there was a great study done, as we've mentioned, Laszlo Polgár took his three daughters and immersed them into a world where chess was the focus. All three of them turned out to be incredible chess players. Susan, the oldest, grandmaster. Sophie, the second, was an international grandmaster and champion. And Judith, who was the youngest of the three Polgár sisters, went on to become the most successful female chess player in the world. And we are joined right now by Judith Polgár. Judith, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I've been very excited to talk to you for a number of reasons. And one, I think, to start off with, our show concentrates a lot on talent development and the power of environment on development. And you were part of what might be one of the greatest educational and developmental experiments of all time. Your father, Laszlo Polgár, who is a psychologist by trade and also a fantastic author, he wrote the book Bringing Up Genius. Long before you were born, set upon the idea of creating talent and the power of environment on development. And what a fantastic trip it's been for you and your sisters.
I grew up in a very special environment, which was created by my parents. I didn't go to school, neither my sister, Sophia and Susan. For me, of course, this was the natural way of growing up. But at the age of 6, 7, of course, I realized it, that I'm not this average kind of kid who lives the daily routine. But me and my sisters had a very different lifestyle, and we were homeschooled, focusing on chess, playing the game from, I started to play the first moves to learn it when I was 5. And then slowly I increased the playing time. From 5 minutes, 10 minutes, up to many hours already when I was 8, 9 years old, I was already competing very actively. And actually, my first international success was in New York when I was 9 years old. And it was a very unique lifestyle, which was kind of very natural to me.
Yeah, it certainly was. We're talking with Judit Polgár, the greatest female chess player of all time and one of the famed Polgár sisters. Judit, let's talk about your father and how the entire experiment came together long before you were born. Just an interesting story about what his mindset was and what his thought process was and how he met your mother as well. And, of course, she was right on board. Being a teacher herself, she really understood what the potential was here. But I think it's really interesting your father was so dedicated and had this kind of foresight in an area that was just developing back when he was a young professional.
Well, yeah, the interesting part is that long before I was born, actually long before my sister, my older sister Susan was born, my father had an idea before he met my mom that once he's going to have children, he'd like to have 6 child, and for sure they are not going to join school, because he realized that the school system is not the best for the kid from academic point of view. And he very much made a lot of research how the big talents and the geniuses like Mozart or any other in the sports or science or music, all the people who reached very high results, they started at a very young age. And when he met my mom, he was telling all about this, his ideas, and then my mother was kind of very curious that he met a very strange man. But later on, my father was insisting very much. They were dating in the very beginning. They met for a few days because my mother is from Karpaty and the Hungarian part of Ukraine, and my father is Hungarian. And then later on, they were having mail, letters, corresponding, and then somehow, little by little, my father convinced my mom that actually all this is not only talks and dreaming, but actually it can be reality. And then when they got married, Susan was born. She was about 4 years old. She was pretty good in math and also in chess, because she found the chess set at the house. And then at the age of 4 and a half, she was very good at both. And then my father thought that, well, it's about time to decide which will be the profession of her. And actually, they choose chess as it's more something you can measure better. The results are more obvious. And that's how it all started with my sister Susan. And she's older, 7 and a half years than me.
We're talking with Judit Polgár, one of the famed Polgár sisters and the greatest female chess player of all time. Judit, it's a fantastic experiment. Your father truly was a pioneer. When he wrote the book, Bringing Up Genius, he made some ripples in the water. And even today, I think, Judith, there still are some people who think that the Polgar sisters might have just been a coincidence and that you guys just came up in the right environment for your genetic makeup. But there's also a strong body out there that believes you guys were the results of what your father and your mother did, and that was create an environment where you could prosper at the game of genius. I personally don't think it's a coincidence. I'd like to get your opinion on what you think was the real reason for the success of you and your sisters.
Well, I think there are quite a lot of components of such a success. First of all, my father is a believer. He's a fanatic. Whatever he believes in, he's going to do it like 100%, no question about it, and very enthusiastic about it. Very much deeply he's into it in every angle. He's looking and analyzing situations and the consequences. The other thing is the perseverance he had, and my mother was a completely partner in this, and she supported all the ideas my father thought, and then of course it was a teamwork. I mean, it was a teamwork for them, because both of them are teachers. Eventually both of them, of my parents, gave up their professional job, and they were very much focusing only on the results and managing me and my sister's career, not only at home by arranging the daily routine and arranging the trainers and doing all the necessary paperwork, bureaucracy, getting visas, etc., but also traveling with us to the events. And we were playing quite a lot of events yearly already. As a professional, you have to travel 5 to 10, 12 events at least a year. And of course, Susan was much ahead until a certain point. So there were times when Susan was going traveling separately to chess events, and separately I was traveling with Sophia and one of my parents. So they had to be very dedicated to the whole program. They really had to feel that they wanted to prove it in one point of view, that their dream, their belief really works. And of course, they had to merge it and do it as a parent. So it was quite a unique mixture, because you can hear a lot that the parents are very supportive, but they are not the managers. And it can also, but my father, actually, he doesn't play so good chess. So he could only help us until the first 1 or 2 years to show us some chess games from book and etc. But shortly after, we had already chess trainers, as we were already beating my father like age 7 in blindfolded. So we took over very fast in level over my father even. My mother knows only the first few moves. And really the main thing is that they believed a lot in working in everyday, daily routine and work a lot of hours, focusing on one specific area. And perseverance is something is something which you have to have, because this is not a journey of a year or two. It was a journey for decades for them to get really results. Even though, of course, after a few years already, they saw that all the work and all the dedication pays off, and it paid off first, of course, with Susan. And in my case, Sophia was also playing very well, but somehow she didn't have so many great success. But in other hand, she was also part of the Olympic team when we won twice the gold medal. But I was somehow really making so much progress in a very short time that I was somehow more unique from this point of view, and she was in the shadow of me.
We're talking with Judith Polgar, grandmaster chess player and the winningest female player of all time. Well, it's interesting to see how, of course, Susan became a grandmaster. Sophia had incredible success on the international stage. You came along and became the youngest grandmaster of all time when you were 15 years and 4 months to beat out Bobby Fischer. And that was a fantastic move, and I think great for the world of chess, but also a fantastic move for female chess players. And I think it really changed the landscape, Judith, when you became the youngest grandmaster of all time. What was that experience like?
Actually, it was very special because to get a Grandmaster title, there is a requirement that you have to prove it in three different kind of events that you can perform that level. And this was the third time I was performing the Grandmaster level. And it was exactly in my hometown in Hungary where I was playing the Hungarian Super Championship between men, and all the top male Grandmasters were playing, who were really world top players also, like Porish and Saks, Adorian. I mean, they were the Olympic team and they were really good. And I won that event. And by winning that event, I made a score that I performed the Grandmaster title for the third time. And with this, I completed the requirements. This was very special in my home country also to perform and show with between all the men players that I am the winner of that event. And I think this was kind of a breakthrough in Hungary and internationally, that it was very clearly I gave not only the impression but also all the proof that I'm kind of serious about this game and I want to move on forward and improve.
Well, let me ask you this. You've had a chance to play all over the world and in a bunch of different formats. And there are stories of you and your sisters taking on multiple opponents at once. Can you give us an example of what this sort of multiple game environment is like and what would be one of the toughest settings you've ever played in?
Well, I guess which you're referring is a simultaneous exhibition.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the maximum of players I played, it was something like 45 players at the same time, which means that usually it takes quite a few hours to play all these games. You can see all chess boards on the table all around, and I'm moving from one board to the next one and make one move at a time. This means that I'm a much better player, I have a much bigger knowledge, and the people who I'm playing in simultaneously, they are club players or amateurs who are just the chess lovers. And this is the reason, I mean, chess, as I started to play when I was 5 years old, it became like my mother tongue. I speak chess. And I speak it so well, I do it so well, that the difference is it makes it possible that I make a simultaneous game. So by all the patterns and very quickly, I realize what's really happening on the game. And actually, also I remember all the games. Usually, like after I finish them, I can remember all the game what really happened because I do it so much and it's so much in my blood. The game of chess and all the patterns and moves and situations, that it's not really a problem to do this exhibition.
So in that simultaneous game of 45 players, how did you fare in terms of win-loss ratio?
Well, it very much depends on how strong the opposition is.
Yeah.
If I remember well, this I don't remember exactly what was the score, but I remember it was in Germany and it was pretty tough. They play chess, the amateurs, pretty well in Germany. It was many years ago. I lost a few games, few draws, but the majority of the games, like over 30, I definitely won.
Okay, so in a simultaneous match of 45, you won 30 matches. That is a pretty darn good winning percentage. Let me tell you, I have trouble focusing on one game. I cannot even imagine 45, especially against passionate chess players. Well, our conversation with Judit Polgár will continue right after this as we look at the influence of environment on talent and skill development right here on Crush Performance. We'll be back right after this. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
And welcome back to Crush Performance. I am so glad you're here today as we continue our discussion on the power of environment on development. Now, we're talking not just development in sport, we're talking about talent development across the board, regardless of what you're doing. It could be business, it could be academics, music, school, certainly chess, as we're joined today by Judith Polgaard, one of the greatest female chess players of all time and the youngest of the famed Polgaard sisters. If you want to get in touch with us with any questions, comments, or smart remarks, do so. Go to our website, crushperformance.com. Sign up for our newsletter. You'll get links to our podcast and the entire world of human performance. You can also follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush. And on Facebook, we have a group called The Talent Grid. Go there, apply, we'll let you in. All we do there is hook you up with the information that is steering and pushing the world of human development forward. Judith, I want to thank you again for joining us today and staying on the line. You know, it's interesting what you mentioned, that you remember the games and you remember the plays and you remember the sequences. We do a lot of work with professional athletes in baseball, in soccer, in football, and hockey. And it's interesting because those top performers remember virtually every game, every goal, and they recall their games as well. I wonder if this has something to do with the way the mind gets programmed when you're so entrenched at a high performance level in an endeavor, whether it's chess, music, or sports. A very interesting perspective or concept.
I also believe that it is very interesting that practically when you know something really well, you're really an expert in that, you don't actually do the things what you see, what the average people see. Actually, we have it in our blood, in our heart, in our movements. And visually, we can replay it. It's no matter whether it's chess or in other sport, or even if you love movies, of course you can talk about movies, right? That, wow, in this situation, what happened? What did he say? And you recall it, right?
Right.
It's the same thing on a high level in any, and it's not only a sport. I think it's every profession you're in. You have to have this special vision that you simply have it as a picture visually. You see things front of you, or no matter whether you're watching out to the sky or a building, you have it somehow. When you talk about it, you really visualize the situation. And once I had a festival in Hungary, the Global Chess Festival, and once I wanted to show this also, that whether it's music or chess or even a Rubik's Cube, you can do all these things blindfolded without seeing any of the three, because simply you do it so much and you're so intensely involved that you know what move comes after which move or what hit comes after. So this is something really special when you're deeply involved in something that it's not only in chess. In chess, of course, with chess grandmasters, it's very typical that after a game or before a game, we are taking a walk and then we are discussing a chess line, chess position. It is something very common.
Judith, that's very interesting. I think that maybe your father had an idea that this was the case long before the sisters were born, and this is something he was thinking about. Hey, Judith, can you remember back when you were a young girl playing at the highest level, and how your approach to the game changed as you got older and matured and played some of the top players in the world? Can you remember a change in perspective, or do you recall the way your thought process changed as you matured as an expert chess player?
Absolutely. In the beginning, when I was very little, a child, when I was 5, 6, 7, 8, for quite a few years, up to age 12 or 13, it was practically a game. Everything worked out the way I wanted. I was beating up adults, grown-up men. I won many tournaments. I was part of the Olympic gold medalist team. So somehow everything was turning into gold where I was playing. And this gave me a lot of self-confidence, and everything seemed to be so easy for me. And then when I entered into the top competitions, when I was 13, I became in the top 30 in the world in absolute between men and women, and became number one between the female ranking. After that, something changed. Of course, all these gambits and very spectacular play did not work exactly all the time when I was playing against stronger opposition. And then I had to learn to pull myself back, to control myself more, to spend more time on preparation, also to spend more time during the game, to be more careful, think twice with my decisions. And so this also formed my play. Like I started to play different openings, different systems, different structure, different strategies against different people. And of course, experience gives also a lot of extra to my my knowledge, my play. But it also sometimes makes you lazy, that you want to rely on your experience. So it is something that is changing time to time. But also I had some difficult times when you work a lot but still things somehow don't work on your way. And it happened that it was about around 2000 when I had some crisis, that no matter where I was playing, somehow things did not work the way I wanted. And then the most important thing is to not to be distracted and not to be disappointed as much that you want to throw away the game, but to stay calm and go back after a bad tournament and analyze with critical thinking what things you did and why did it go wrong. And of course, these things always change you. The most important thing is to be able to fight and be competitive for being there for many decades, is somehow to find for yourself new challenges and create motivation.
Judith, in the developmental model, there comes a time when the skill set is established, the technical side is established, and even the experience level gets to a point where there's something else that needs to be added in order for the performer to go to the next level. And usually that's the point where competition becomes so, so important. Good competition at the right time can really push the development of a young performer forward. Was there a time when competition really helped you develop? And what were some of the toughest competitions that you ever had? And what did you learn from them?
I had a few difficult matches, but I would say that I would say that, for example, to play against Kasparov when I was playing first time, I was 17, but later on I played with him many times. For example, against him, it was extremely difficult to play for me in the beginning, as he had such a charisma that when I sat down to the board, practically I've lost the game without making a single move. And why is that possible? It's because psychology is a big part of chess. And he had such an image of great preparation. And of course, he was the world champion already by that time. And he has such an aura and charisma sitting there that he was like, I had the feeling he wants to eat me up alive there. So, but actually he's kind of an exception that he has such a strong personality and presence at the board. And of course, against him, it took me a lot of time to discover how can I use a good strategy, it can work, that actually at all I'm playing a balanced game against him, a normal fight, even though he was better, at least I'm not afraid so much that I'm going to lose the game for sure, and it's only technicality that we make some moves. And it took me years, and eventually I found a strategy which where I used his own weapon against him in the same system what he's usually playing. I was using it against him, and somehow it worked. So that was maybe one of the biggest turnover for me. From this point of view, that I had a very bad score against him, and finally I made a few very important draws first, and then finally I beat him. I had also, against some other players, also I had the different difficulties.
Interesting. Well, competition is important, and I have to ask you, Judith, growing up, you must have had some great matches against your sisters. How heated was that, playing your siblings, and was that a different approach? Was it more cutthroat, you know? Were you guys pretty competitive as young players, or how did it go when you played your sisters?
Well, it was interesting because Susan was much many years ahead of me, and then when I was about 9, 10, I was in the living room. She had already serious training, And I wanted to sneak in to learn more from her and her trainer. But of course, I was not allowed. But sometimes, even though when they had a break, I sneaked in and I was trying to show how clever I am. And, uh-huh. and sometimes I had already some good ideas and they couldn't prove that they are right all the time. And then more and more occasions, it became that I said some interesting ideas. And I also played with my sisters, which was a lot of fun. We almost played daily basis, a lot of blitz games, which means for each game, we had each of us 5 minutes for the whole game. We played many of those. And of course, we had a healthy competitive attitude towards, and we wanted to beat one another. And there were some period of time where we were, the games were quite balanced because in strength they were pretty near to each other. So it was a very healthy competition. And of course, when you're a sport person, you're competing, you want to win. That's very clear.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I have two brothers and a sister, and I tell you, when we either played checkers or chess or Monopoly, I hated to lose. If there was one group of people that I wanted to kick butt, it was my brothers and sisters. So I can imagine when the Polgar sisters get together and sit down to a game of chess, it's fairly heated, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we wanted to win, and then if one wins, then we are talking about it for days that I beat you, and then she wanted to take your revenge.
Yeah.
So it was always going on back and forth.
I love it. And that's sisterly love there. Nothing greater than sibling rivalries. We're joined by Judith Polgar, Grandmaster chess player and the most successful female player of all time. Judith, thank you so much for your time today. Listen, before we go, your life has taken a big change. You retired in 2014. And you moved on to pursue some other great interests. The Judith Polgar Chess Foundation is an incredible organization that does a lot of things for young people and also for the game of chess. And you've also authored a good number of books. How has your life changed since chess has sort of taken the back seat now?
Well, my life didn't come too much calmer than before, but it transformed quite a bit. Well, first of all, I spend more time with my kids, which they need a lot because they are getting starting to be early teenage years. They are 10 and 12. But from chess point of view, I was the captain for the Hungarian men's national team for nearly 2 years. I'm doing a chess festival in Hungary. I'm building a community with Chess Connects Us. I hope that each year, October 2nd, Saturday, will be a chess celebration day all over the world. And we have a website for this where I want to upload all the possible events on that day. This year is going to be 14th of October, that I want to show to the world that chess is not by chance a 1,500 years old ancient game. It has such a resources from many aspects. Also, not only from sport, but also cultural, social, educational point of view. We have a festival there, which we are organizing every year. And this year, we are also going to have a big chess event and all kind of side events. Also, we have an educational program, which is implemented in Hungary in the educational system. It's an optional subject starting from 2013. Already many hundreds of schools are using it, the Chess Palace program. We are working now on the kindergarten part, which is the chess playground program. It's going to be for kindergarten age, preschool. Now I'm working with the UN Women as a Planet 50-50 champion. So I have many, many things I'm working on, and also I'd like to do more for promoting chess. I was the commentator last November in New York at the World Championship match between Carlsen and Karjakin. So there are a lot of interesting things and journeys I'm doing at the moment and looking forward to do more.
Well, Judith, thank you so much for your time today. Listen, you lived through what might be one of the greatest talent and learning experiments of all time. For all the parents, coaches, athletes, competitors, and experts out there, what would be the takeaway from your lifelong experience growing up in that environment? coming through, now having kids of your own, and then participating in the game that you love, chess. What would be a big takeaway for people to think about when we're looking at developing young talent and pursuing our dreams?
Well, generally, for example, for my success, I usually say there are the three P's, which is necessary, and it was obliged in my career, is practice, perseverance, and passion, what you're doing. I mean, without these three, you're not going to reach the highest level for sure, I think. But generally, I think it's the most important thing, the journey, not the destination. But still, you have to put your goals to the highest, so at least you know the direction where you're heading to. And also, it's a lifelong learning journey.
We never stop learning. That is the absolute truth. Judith, so much. Thank you so much for your time today. Listen, we'll look forward to following you. The website is judithpolgar.com, and we really appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Well, there you go. A fantastic conversation with Judith Polgar, the youngest of the famous Polgar sisters. I have been waiting for that conversation for a number of years now, so I'm glad that happened. And I think I have more questions now than I had going into this conversation, which is absolutely great because that's what it's all about. But isn't it interesting to hear from somebody who actually went through the process of being entrenched from day one in an environment focused on success in a particular endeavor, how powerful the process actually was? Being there, being supported, and having all of the resources at your disposal, how could you not get better? And I think we've seen examples of this in sport. I mean, we could look at the Williams sisters, for example. These girls came up in an environment that was conducive for performance in tennis. What if they weren't exposed to tennis? What if it was golf or badminton, or what if it was soccer or basketball? Who knows what these girls could have accomplished? But tennis was the focus, and they both had incredible success with all of the resources and all the support in the world. We could also talk about Tiger Woods, who virtually grew up with a golf club in his hand. And there's also great examples of sport families where the parents were involved in sport, or a brother was involved in sport, or a sister involved in sport, and the other siblings or children were successful in sport. It has a lot to do with environment. Now listen, you have to have the genetics in order to be successful. There's no arguing that. But if you're not exposed to or don't have access to a sport or an endeavor that you can be successful at, what if Tiger Woods was never given a golf club? What would he have wound up doing? What if Michael Jordan or LeBron James were never introduced to the game of basketball? What would they have wound up doing? Environment has such a powerful, powerful influence on what we wind up doing that I think sometimes we underestimate it. On the other side, I think sometimes we overdo it, and we see that in this new age of specialization and one-sport athletes. We know in the long run that there's potential harm done when we specialize in one sport too early. On the other side, there are those sports, figure skating might be one of them, gymnastics another, where early specialization is an absolute must. So it's an interesting conversation regardless. We have to thank Judith for coming on today. What a fantastic look inside of one of the greatest educational and developmental experiments in the history of mankind. So, boy, pass this one on to everybody that you know. You can get the podcast at our website, crushperformance.com. So that's the show for today. We got to wrap it up. Con Man, thank you for all your help here, and we want to thank you for listening. Next week on the show, we continue our look into development and skill acquisition and the power of environment of sorts, as we talk with the Senior Director of Player Development for the Edmonton Oilers of the NHL. Rick Carrier will join us as we discuss player development, the importance of coaching, and some great helpful tips for parents, athletes, and coaches out there as we look to help our athletes succeed at every level of sport. So we'll look forward to that conversation, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week right here on Crush Performance. Talk to you then.
This is an Ian Beckles Flava in Your Ear quick fix on Radio Influence.
You have to give the Patriots 100% of the credit. But if you're an Atlanta Falcons fan, you go back and watch that game, if you don't throw up in your mouth, because they had a half dozen situations where they could have and should have put that game away. Done, over with, game should have been over. There was a half dozen times where somebody makes a play who was right there to make the play, and they didn't get it done. So we have to listen to Patriots fans for a whole nother year, and their plumage is all out like the biggest peacock on the lot, and they deserve it. They deserve it because that's where we measure ourselves from. And there's a lot of haters out there, a lot of Patriots haters. And you know what? That's the best thing in the world where everybody's hating you. Because I don't think anybody hates the Buccaneers. They don't warrant that much hate. But the Patriots get as much hate as they deserve. And that, to me, I've always said, if that many people are hating you, you're doing something right.
You can find Ian Beckles' Flava in Your Ear on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.